The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We have the details in the last few minutes of Charlie Gard's life. Really touching. We want to share with you today. Also, calling all fascists. We need to hear, and I mean this sincerely, I need to hear from somebody who really does not see what Google did as fascism. Because I can't make it work in my own head. I don't know how you don't see that. So if you happen to be somebody who has followed this story about one of their Google engineers saying, look, our diversity program is limiting diversity. It is harming the company. It is harming people and our society. We're on the wrong track. There are reasons for some of these diversity problems, and we have to have an open and honest discussion about them. He made a very reasoned case. Boy, the left is celebrating that Google terminated him yesterday. This is corporate fascism. And I don't want to try to convince you, if you happen to be listening, you're like, Glenn, you're completely wrong on this. I want to hear from you because I do not understand your opinion. And I really want to. So if that's you, 888-727-BEZK, call us right now. There's a lot to discuss about the road to fascism and Google and Apple and Facebook. Let's have that discussion, something that actually will make a difference in our lifetime. We do that right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Google has fired an employee who wrote a 10-page memo critiquing the company's leftist monopoly. An anonymous employee had the bravery to write a 10-page memo, and this memo was very well written. It's really intelligent. You may not agree with everything in it. I think I did. I mean, I only read it once, but I don't think there was anything in there I really disagreed with. He talks about diversity and that you cannot correct a diversity problem without looking at all of the facts. For instance, he talks about software engineers, and they are now at Google offering classes for different things. But if you are, for instance, a white male, you cannot attend those classes. Google is not allowing you to learn those things. Well, why? How do you fix discrimination with discrimination? That's like, we're going to stop all these slave owners. We're going to enslave all the slave owners. And the slaves can own the slave owners. That's not fixing slavery. That's just switching places. Well, we have to do something. No, not like that. And so he points out that you're creating more problems by having these discriminatory practices. And then you're also denying basic science. And now what he's saying is there is a biological difference between men and women. Since when? Since when has men are from Mars, women are from Venus become crazy, bigoted, outrageous, needs to be banned? We all understand this if you live with a member of the opposite sex. There are things that women do and say and think and emote that for the life of me, I have tried. I've got four women in my house. I've got my three daughters and my wife. And no matter how hard I try, I just don't understand them all the time. And they don't understand me. And yet, my son and I, we're in lockstep. We can look at each other just across the table and just like, there it is. Don't understand that one. How'd that one happen? Now, that doesn't mean we don't love them, appreciate them, hold them in a place that is exactly the same as me, as just as valid. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and they do the same thing. We have different languages. We have a different approach to life. And this is the thing that has become so frustrating to me lately, is I don't understand this. We would never say, well, no, I can't even say this anymore. We would never say, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and so we've got to blow up Mars or Venus before the other side gets here. But that's what we are doing. We're saying men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and if you think like somebody from Mars or you think like somebody from Venus, you're the enemy. You're the problem, and we need to shut you up. No. This is the heart wanting to be the head, or the foot wanting to be the hand. Everything is unique and has purpose. And it is the bringing together. I can't believe I'm in the position in this world to where I'm making the liberal case, to where I'm the one saying, no, it's the entire rainbow. It's all of it. The diversity makes us stronger. Diversity, having a real conversation with somebody that is sometimes uncomfortable, makes you stronger. The only way, we are honestly saying, well, I want an exercise routine that will make me stronger and healthy, but I don't want to actually breathe heavy afterwards. I don't want to be tired during, and I want no pain of my muscles afterwards. You know what you get? You get one of those exercise machines from the 1920s that just moves your fat around. It does nothing. It does nothing. Now let me ask people, if you happen to agree with Google firing this guy, I want to hear from you. I don't know if there's going to be anybody in our audience. I hope there is, because we have to have a dialogue. I have to be able to understand your point of view. I'm not going to belittle you, mock you, try to change your mind. I really want to understand, because I don't. And this is the way I view this. This is fascism. And again, I feel like I'm in the position where the left is supposed to be. This is corporate fascism. Look at what is happening. We are closer to being a corporation than a country than ever before in my lifetime. This has been going down this road for a very long time, but as long as we had the Constitution, I foolishly dismissed that. But here we are. We're in a place to where you're telling me that Facebook, Apple, and Google don't or couldn't control the United States? Of course they could. Do you know, we found out last week that Apple alone has $56 billion worth of U.S. Treasury bonds. That is more than most countries hold. Now, we have a problem with countries holding our U.S. Treasury bonds, because if they don't get their way, they can sell them and destabilize our economy. Well, Apple wouldn't do that. Right, right, right. I forgot about that. Just like China needs us. Just like North Korea will never get a nuke. Just like there never will be a caliphate. That's ridiculous. It's different this time. It's never different this time. Anybody who says it's different this time, that should be your first sign that that person is not engaged in critical thinking. Because the first thing that you learn when you're engaged in critical thinking is it's never different this time. It's always what the people who are on this new bandwagon, that's what they always say just before things go bad. Human nature. What we're doing, what the left is doing, and I am convinced, and maybe I'm wrong, but I am convinced that there are those people on the left that are just as afraid of the Antifa movement as I am. That are just as afraid of what's happening on our college campuses. I am convinced that there are professors who helped unleash this nightmare who now realize, oh, wait a minute, because people are people. They're no different than many of us who thought our party was above all those things and realized, oh, crap, we're exactly the same. We're part of the problem. You can't tell me that there aren't those people in universities that aren't thinking, oh, crap, what are we doing? This is going in the wrong direction. This is going against everything we stood for. You also can't tell me that there aren't people in Google. Now, there are those because they have been educated with this postmodernism. They've been educated with all of that nonsense that they are no longer engaged in critical thinking. It is only social justice. And now it's only about winning. But you can't tell me that there's only this guy in Google that feels this way. The reason why Google fired this guy is because they need to silence them. They need to make sure that when they say that's not okay, what they're sending the message is, and we will fire you. We will destroy you. We will smear you. Because your point of view is not okay anywhere. Now, let me ask you. A company that believes that they should fire, instead of having an intellectual dialogue, and I'm not talking about bringing in, you know, crazy people. I'm not saying you bring in flamethrowers and political nonsense, but have an actual dialogue with reasonable and educated people on both sides, and you both walk away going, wow, I never thought of it that way. I don't think I agree, but I never saw it that way. You can't tell me that that's a bad thing. It's not. And if you're trying to silence the actual intellectual arguments of another side, you have become nothing more than the ancient church that would take scientists and lock them away or kill them. You are becoming McCarthy. And I don't understand how that's not happening. And there's something more disturbing, because a company that says we won't allow that kind of thinking in this company, how could that company allow their search engine to find that opinion? Because that's the next step. If that company becomes so locked into its agenda and that it's right and nothing else is right, how could they possibly allow this monologue to to be found on Google in a positive way. They couldn't. How can you? Because you've deemed this opinion bad for society, sexist, racist. How could you possibly do that? You can't. So isn't what they do now internally only a matter of time before they start doing it externally? Our sponsor this half hour is Simply Safe. Please, if you are listening and you see what Google is doing as a good thing, please call. I'm not going to hold you up and try to, you know, convince you. I just need to understand. What am I missing here? 888-727-BECK. Don't leave for vacation this summer without securing your home. It's so funny. I grew up in a town, Mount Vernon, Washington, this little town in Skagit Valley, Tulip Country. It's such a great little town. Not so little anymore, I bet. But and we never locked our doors, except when we went on vacation, which was twice growing up. If we would leave and we were going to be gone for a week, that's the only time my dad would ever lock the door. I remember him locking and unlocking the door twice in my life. That's because that's when burglars hit. They hit during the day for the rest of the year, but during summer vacations, they hit during the day and they watch houses that have nobody in them. When you have nobody in them, that's when you're going to get hit. You're away. Simply Safe will help you secure your home. Right now, you can get $100 off Simply Safe's special summer package. It has everything you need to keep your home safe from intruders. It has round-the-clock monitoring for $15 a month with no contract. It's protection done right. Don't miss this sale. It ends August 13th. Go to simplysafebeck.com. You'll save $100 today at simplysafebeck.com. $100 off simplysafebeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. We've got a couple of people who understand Google and agree with Google. Let me go to Nate in Virginia. Hello, Nate.
Hey, Beck. How you doing, buddy?
Very good.
Hey, I understand why you might be upset, but I really don't see since when here in America do corporations need like legitimate reasons to fire someone they think is causing problems in their organization or in their company, or does not agree with their future vision of the world.
Okay, so hang on just a second. Let's make sure that we're not on legalistic terms, because legally, Google can run their company any way they want to run their company. I'm not talking about legalistically. I'm talking about corporate fascism when your diversity director is silencing those voices that are diverse from yours. There seems to be a problem, especially when it is a well-made case. Now, you as a company can do whatever you want. If they want to fire them, that's great. But I don't see that as a positive thing.
Well, here's the thing with companies and corporations, unlike governments. They require a lot more unity, a unity in purpose, a unity in vision. And if there's certain people in the corporation, say, for instance, they're the right-wingers, and this is a left libtard Grand Central Station. Obviously, those right-wingers need to keep their thoughts and their politics at home where it belongs and should not bring it out into the corporation world at all, because that's not why they're there. They're there to work.
No, that's not. No, because what the corporate culture is bringing these social justice politics out because they say they're trying to create a better world. So what this person was saying was, wait, but you're not including me at that. I don't think it's right to shove people into a closet, no matter what their point of view is. I don't see silencing people. Let me just put it this way. I appreciate your call, Nate. I'd like somebody to answer this question. First of all, what Nate said is right. Companies can do whatever they want. I agree. But help me out on this. How if you're trying to be diverse and celebrate diversity, when an intellectually solid opposing view is presented, how do you silence that and still claim you're for diversity?
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, seeing a lot of phone calls up on the board, and I want to make sure that we are, that you understand what I'm asking you on this Google firing of one of their engineers. What I'm asking you is not, did Google have the right to do it? They're a private company. They could do whatever their shareholders, you know, accept. They are a private company. They're setting their own temperature. So, okay, they want to fire somebody who disagrees with them. That's great. Personally, I don't do that. I have, the first person I hired at The Blaze was a woman who was pro-choice, but she was open about it. She was rock solid in her thinking on it, and it was a different point of view. I never once censored her. I never once said, okay, keep that to yourself. Never. Ask Amy Holmes. Two, Sarah Carlson. She now directs Meet the Press. She worked for me for what, 6 years, 7 years? She was my director at Fox and my director here at The Blaze until she left for Meet the Press. She's from San Francisco, as left and progressive as they come. I used to ask for her opinion in crowds after shows. Where did I get it wrong, Sarah? What did I say that you wouldn't understand or XYZ? She was never afraid, at least that I think, never afraid to express her opinion. They shouldn't be. If somebody, you're working for somebody who has an opinion and you are afraid to express yours, that doesn't mean that you can express your opinion and then keep fighting against it, because the boss has made the decision. This is the direction we're going. And if you don't want to go in that direction, then you should go find someplace else. But you should never be afraid of expressing your opinion, especially if the boss says to you, which Google did, we're a campus that wants to be very diverse and we need everybody's help on this. So share your thoughts of diversity. What's happening with diversity? How can we be better? And then a person steps up and says, okay, because the stuff that you were doing doesn't make any sense. And it's intellectually sound. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to believe it's right. But it's intellectually rigorous. It's not, well, because. Okay, that doesn't work. But if it has some intellectual rigor behind it, and you've asked for it, how do you fire that person without showing yourself to be an absolute hypocrite at best and fascist at worst? If this was Firestone, I would be like, they're tire people. I don't really care. They have a right to hire and fire. I'm not going to buy their tires anymore. This isn't Firestone. This is almost everyone's gateway to information, Google. And B, it is also the company that is leading the way in artificial intelligence. So what they decide as right or wrong will be what is sorting. For instance, Facebook just came out last week and said they just started putting AI on censorship. So now they can go in and it's twice as fast as humans, and they can pull down all the offensive stuff. Well, remember, garbage in, garbage out. Do you have diversity of thought? Has Facebook had this conversation that Google is now having and saying, wait a minute, there's two ways to look at things, and just because you believe this does not make that a sexist remark? It might be intellectually sound and good for the body to be able to wrestle with those questions. If AI has decided because it's been taught, nope, that has no place here, does Google start just so they can be consistent and don't be evil? Just because they can make sure that they're changing the world for the better as they deem, do they take the steps to start silencing these opinions elsewhere? And if not, why? Why is there a line? They're all very, very clear now. We have to silence it without any debate. They wouldn't even quote the memo because they didn't want those ideas around here. They're not worth repeating. If they're so sure without debate that they should shut that down because it's wrong, misogynistic, it's evil, they can shut that down there. What stops that group of people saying, well, why the hell are we exposing it over here? We're completely inconsistent. There's cognitive dissonance. We are searching for this internally, this utopia, but we're going to let our search engines and we're going to teach AI that it should tolerate that outside? We're smarter than the people outside. Marty, Tennessee, you're on the Glenn Beck program.
Good morning, Glenn.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I do agree with Google's actions. In my opinion, the integrity and professionalism and even the morals of the gentleman are excellent. But he simply shared his opinion. And by his actions, he stood up for what he believes in and himself and perhaps others. And we all agree that by Google's actions, they conducted themselves in a manner that typical of many businesses and institutions in our country. So we really shouldn't be too surprised. He stood up for what was right and what he believed in, and I agree. By Google's firing him, they set in place a chain reaction in which his ideologies, his beliefs, deepest moral convictions are brought out from the smaller world of Google and into the world that we can be part of his cause. And I'm truly sorry for the pain and grief the man might go through, but we're all called to suffer, stand up for what we believe in. And by his actions, he did what I believe is right and true. And the truth about Google is now out. And on a personal note, I had the exact same thing happen here in Tennessee, where I stood up for what was right, and I was persecuted. And I had the exact same thing happen. And we are called to stand up for what we believe in.
So
we do suffer.
I agree with you that we all have to stand up. But what part of now that Google is exposed, how are you suggesting people are going to rally? I mean, have you seen the news coverage on this? And how do they rally? I thought about this last night. Well, I'm not using... Oh, yes, I am. I'm going to use Google. I'm going to use Google. So what course of action do you have?
As one, I have no action. As many, we would. And I agree with you. We can't say I'm not using Google. I've got it on my computer right now. And that would be foolish. It needs to come from a burning desire from within the company that they say, this is really the truth. And we need to act in order to better serve our employees, our families, and the community in which we serve. It has to come from within. They need to have conviction, and from that we will have success. It may not happen right away, but as an individual, I'm not sure what to do.
So, Marty, you said this happened to you. Did A, tell me your story, and B, was there, you know, I don't even know how to say, justice in the end?
I am a teacher. And in a school here in Nashville, we were exposed to dangerous molds. And I showed this to the district. I brought it to their attention for several months, and they refused to do anything about it. And as a result, I became very ill and had to have surgery with a massive infection removed from my head because of the black mold growing in my head. I figured out that there were dozens of other children that were being sick and had to leave the school because of it. And despite my bringing the samples that I had tested to the school district and sharing it with them, they said it's dust. It's nothing to worry about. Children are sick. Teachers are sick. They refuse to do anything. And after my surgery, I could not breathe the air in the school because of the mold is still in the HVAC system. And then I said, my doctors told me I have to take the last week of school off. I just cannot continue to be in this environment. I was wearing a surgical mask as to filter it out.
Okay, so quick, I'm up against a break, so I just want to cut to the end. So they fired you because of that. Have they fixed the mold since?
They say that they have, but in a conference prior to me leaving, I sat down with the principal, the vice principal. I sat with the OSHA head of the district and the facilities manager, and they looked at me and they said, the job's too big. We're not going to fix it until 2018, the summer of, when we do a full renovation. And I begged, what are we going to do about the sick kids? What are we going to do about making sure that they're safe? The mold is in the cafeteria, the library, and the classrooms in the third of the school.
Again, I don't mean to rush it, but did they fix it?
No.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Marty. I appreciate it. And thanks for standing up. And you did the right thing for standing up. But again, not fixed. I ask you that about Google. What are you going to do about Google? Nothing. I'm not even going to stop using Google. I mean, that's it'd be true. I have wanted to many times. They're the best out there. And they are this is the key here. It's not a tire company. It is the gateway to information.
Well, I'm switching to Ask Jeeves from now on.
The issue is, though, if they continue to do these types of things. I mean, when you take a guy who has a bachelor in molecular biology, physics and chemistry at the University of Illinois, has a PhD in systems biology from Harvard, is a research intern at Princeton, research intern at Harvard, research scientist at MIT.
Smart guy.
And then went to Google. When you start firing people like that, you're making yourself vulnerable, right? And there's something bizarre about a bunch of feminists telling us that the most successful company basically in the history of the world has been male-dominated the whole time. They are telling us that the culture there has been all about males. It's all been dominated by males. Yet, look at what they've done. It's such a strange argument to come from a feminist. But the idea is when you implement policies, this is the opposite of the way they built Google, right? When they start implementing policies like this, it's what makes these behemoths vulnerable. And it's how they fall. And they fall hard when they do. Now, one guy getting fired is not going to destroy this company by any means. But if this culture persists, it will make it weaker and somebody else will come and beat them down.
Google, I don't believe that will happen, as Google has made deals with the government on servers. It is part and parcel almost now with our information structure for the United States government. I mean, that thing falls. I would not count that as inevitable.
That's too big to fail now.
I mean, hopefully
too big to fail. Thank you. Now this, the wrong hire will cost your company money. Think if Google could have this back and not hire this bigot, racist, sexist. ZipRecruiter has powerful technology that efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Now, there are job sites where you go post and then it just all comes rolling in. ZipRecruiter is not a job site. ZipRecruiter is a system that doesn't depend on the candidates finding you. You post once. It goes out and posts on all of the job sites. Then it starts to search those job sites for the people that fit your parameters.
Over 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in 24 hours. And there's no juggling emails or calls to your office. You just screen, rate, and manage the candidates all in one place. ZipRecruiter has an easy-to-use dashboard. Right now, post your jobs for free at ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/back. That's ZipRecruiter.com/back.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Glenn Beck Program.
So how do, let me ask you this. How many of us would have any work-life balance if it weren't for the women in our life?
People have work-life balance?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
They do?
Yeah.
Weird.
I'm saying any.
Okay.
Yeah. If you have 5 minutes of balance in your day where you're like at least looking at your children while you're working. How would we have that without our wives?
We'd show up at home to sleep and that'd be about it.
Last night, Michelle, my assistant, was like, it is 6:30. You are going home. You have to go home. Your wife wants you home, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at her and I said, when my wife pays the mortgage payment, I'll go home all the time. I'm trying to make the mortgage payment right now.
You realize you're on the air right now?
Yes.
I just said that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure.
Yes. It would be just like me, because she'll say it to me. You know, I'll say, honey, come on, let's go. When you are the one that is responsible for the schooling and everything else in this house, you go ahead and let me know when you're doing that. You let me know. Hurry up. We got to go to vacation, the movie, whatever it is. Okay. It's a two-way street. And it doesn't mean that one can't do the other. We each have our own thing. But I will tell you this. Naturally, women have much more life balance than guys do. We would most likely work ourselves to death for a stupid sports car in the end if it wasn't for the women in our life. Why can we not look at that diversity and be happy and see its beauty?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Hey, some good news. Americans were number one. Americans now have the highest credit card debt in history.
Yay!
We're growing at an annual rate of 4.9% because the banks are giving more people credit cards. We now have $1.021 trillion in credit card debt. Don't worry. It's different somehow this time. Also, we have a couple of stories, including the final moments of Charlie Gard. The parents have just spoken out and spoke on what the last couple of minutes were like. It is a really touching story, and one that we hope does not repeat itself here in America, because there is a child in Kalamazoo, Michigan that you need to know about that has the same disease. And hopefully, because they live in America, it will have a happy ending. We want to introduce you to those parents beginning right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Charlie Gard is this incredible story. In case you missed it, let me just quickly recap. He just died. It was a week before his first birthday. Chris guarded Connie Yates, had a son born. Everybody thought it was he was fine. Everything was normal. And then symptoms started to have an onset. And because they lived with socialized medicine, the hospital said there's nothing we can do, even though there is experimental and somewhat successful experimental procedures done here in America. The hospital wouldn't let Charlie go. They fought in court. By the time the court case was coming to an end, it was too late. Doctors said here in America, it's too late for him. There's no more time left. The parents sued the hospital, said, please let us just take him home so he can die at home. The hospital took them to court on that one and fought against it and somehow or another won. And he died in a hospice center, but he did die with the parents. And both of them said, we took Charlie out for a walk in a pushchair in the hospice park. We dressed him in Baby Grow with stars on it. He looked so beautiful and innocent. This is according to mom, Connie. The hospice staff popped in. Those last 5 hours just flashed by. A woman said the moment we dreaded would happen in the next 5 minutes. Chris and I were both crying. We laid on the bed with Charlie between us, each of us holding a hand. We were both telling him that we were there and that we loved him and how proud we were of him. Charlie opened his eyes at that moment and looked at us one last time and then closed them and passed away. This story, the beginning of it, as far as the diagnosis, is playing itself out again. In Kalamazoo, Michigan, Russell and Michelle are two parents of a four-month-old. Russell Cruzan III, they refer to him as Bubby. He was born just like Charlie. Great, cute, healthy. And then he wasn't gaining weight. He wasn't eating. And doctors couldn't figure it out. And then finally diagnosed with the same disease that Charlie Gard had. We have Russell Curzan and Michelle Budnick-Knapp on the phone, parents of Bubby. How are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Very good. Can you tell us, first of all, how's Bubby doing today?
He's doing pretty good. He's taking a nap right now.
Okay.
Yep.
When you first found out, did you know who Charlie Gard was?
Not originally, no. Very shortly afterwards, yes. As soon as we, we were trying to do research into his condition, which, you know, they both have mitochondrial DNA depletion syndrome. It's just different gene mutations causing it. They're both encephalomyopathic. But as soon as we Googled, you know, his condition, of course, Charlie popped up and we started looking into his story.
Have you talked to the Charlie's parents?
We did originally when we had first found out. Me and Connie talked a little bit back and forth, but obviously things have been really overwhelming for them. Yeah. And
yeah,
they're quite busy.
So hopefully you were going to tell me that things are quite different here in America than they are overseas. Can you tell me about...
So far, yeah, we have definitely found that that things are quite different. We have the capability to get treatment wherever we want to right now. We've been inpatient at our local hospital a few times, Bronson. We love them. And, if we think that he needs to go somewhere else or he thinks he needs to, go somewhere else, then they're very willing to work with us to make that happen. Also, we're free to make an appointment wherever we want for him to see any specialist that we want.
Have you reached out to the specialist that the guard parents were trying to have take care of? Yes. Charlie?
Yes, we have. And he doesn't believe treatment of that sort at this time would do any good at all.
So does that mean that it might later, or it just doesn't apply to your
as
son?
As far as we know, it doesn't apply to Russell. We're still hoping to look at it as an option. Right now, we are pursuing DCA treatment with Boston's Children's Hospital. We're hoping that he can be considered for a trial of the medication there.
So what is the prognosis, Russell?
The prognosis, I mean, with no treatment, the prognosis is pretty grim. With the prospect of treatment, we really don't know because it's all experimental, but we're hoping that it could help preserve the healthy mitochondria that he has and help keep some of the toxic levels in his body down, the lactic acid and ammonia down, because those are kind of our number one dangers right now.
So what is this? How did it first manifest, and what is the body doing?
Basically, how it all starts is me and his mother are both carriers of a gene, a chromosome that's bad.
We have one bad one, one good one. Did you know that in advance?
No. Okay. The only way you can figure that out is through genetic testing, which nobody gets genetic testing unless there's an issue.
Yes.
But so we're both carriers for a bad chromosome, and we have a good chromosome. And then we both have the same bad chromosome, just a different mutation of it. So that's how he got it. There's like a 1 in a million chance that two people meet each other that are like that. And then it's still like a 25% chance one of your kids can get it.
So when it started to manifest, because I've seen pictures of baby Russell, and, you know, he looks healthy. He looks, you know, like he's supposed to, a little, you know, porky, a little fat, you know, babies are supposed to. And then I've seen recent pictures, and he's thin. Is that how you first noticed? Was he wasn't eating?
Well, he started out thin.
Yeah, right.
And then he's porky now.
right now.
Oh, so I've seen the pictures in reverse then. Okay.
Yeah. When the disease originally started manifesting itself, it manifested as failure to thrive first. He wasn't eating on his own. We started with the NG tube. Now he has a G tube placed in his stomach, and that has really helped him thrive and got to the point where he's nice, chubby, plump little guy now.
So do you guys have insurance?
Yes, I carry insurance through work, and we also have Medicaid through the state.
So does your insurance cover this?
They have started to pay some things. We're working on the treatment. That's what they're working on, prior authorization for us to go there to be seen. And then they'll work on it. It all depends how it's billed. If it's billed as experimental, more than likely not.
Can I ask, you don't have to tell me, can I ask what insurance carrier it is?
Yes, I carry Priority Health.
I'm sure Priority Health wants to do the right thing and help you out.
From everybody I've talked to, they're doing pretty good so far.
Good. They're trying.
They're trying.
Yeah. The Medicaid is kicking in for what?
Anything state-wise, in-state. They said they don't pay out-of-state.
But they're being helpful, very helpful right now, picking up, you know, co-pays, deductibles.
I haven't had to pay anything out of pocket yet.
What have you, good for you. What have you, what do you guys do for a living?
Well, she's a stay-at-home mother now because he requires so much work.
Right.
But I'm in construction.
And how's business?
Oh, we're busy.
Good.
We're busy.
Good. Is there a way?
I'm getting 60, 70 hours a week.
Is there a way to donate if people wanted to help, you know, cover any of the bills as they begin to mount up?
Yes, there's a UCaring. It's and if you go on UCaring, you can just search up Bubby or Russell Cruzan. Russell Cruzan should get you directly to it.
Okay,
right. We're fundraising to cover some of the travel costs to Boston. If we are accepted into the treatment trial, there would be multiple trips to Boston. So, you know, those travel costs add up very quickly. We live in Michigan.
You guys sound, I mean, I have to tell you, I read about your story a couple of weeks ago. And so I've thought about you and as a family, we have prayed for you all. I thought to myself, you know, gosh, if my son was diagnosed with something that Charlie Gard had at the time of the Charlie Gard story, I think I'd lose my mind. And you guys both seem happy?
We lose it all the time.
Yeah, we do. We
put on this brave face. I'm used to putting the brave face on for the specialist because I can't, when, you know, a specialist doctor is trying to tell me what's going on with my son, I can't be emotional. I have to put on my brave face and say, okay, tell me what I need to do. Tell me what needs to be done to keep him as healthy as possible. So we try.
And Russell, how are you doing it?
I look at my other three kids and see how they act. And I don't want them to be upset and by seeing me upset. So, I mean, it's pretty much the other three. And then to see how strong he is, he's the strongest person I've ever seen in my life.
He's our superhero.
So everything he's been through, and he still puts a smile on his face and laughs. So that's how I do it.
We cry in the shower.
Yeah. What a great couple. And thanks, strangely, for lifting my spirits. Thanks for making me feel good in talking to you both. We will keep you in our prayers, and please check in with us if there's something that you need or something we can do to help. Please feel free to call. You have all of our digits and our emails, so you can get a hold of us. If you would like to get involved and help the family, you can go to youcaring.com. If this just helps you remember, Bubby, B-U-B-B-Y, Bubby.
We tweeted it out from at World of Stew. It's up there when I was tweeted from at Glenn Beck as well.
Yep, and we will have it at glennbeck.com. But please, if you can, help the family not have to worry about any kind of expenses so they can do what they need to do. Guys, thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Is that great?
Yeah, you're right. Their attitude is like so positive. Jeez. And they are putting on a brave face. If that is,
there's a difference between putting on a brave face and finding your way to joy. Hmm. They sound to me like it's not a brave face. It is. And maybe it was just nervous laughter. Maybe that's what it was. But it seems to me that they have found a way to joy. And boy, that's hard to do. That is hard to do. God bless them. Now this, it can be easily overlooked, but your windows actually have a huge impact on the look and the feel of your home. And at Blinds.com, they're going to help you transform your home. Their customer service is the best that you can get somebody on that will help you pick the right shade, shutters, drapes, if that's what you need. If you know what you want, they will help you with the measurements to make sure that everything is right. Even if you mismeasure, though, they are so competent at what they do. They're convinced that you won't mismeasure. Even if you mismeasure, they will replace those blind shade shutters or drapes for free and recut a new set and send them to you. Even if you pick the wrong color, you get it and you're like, it's not what I wanted. It's not what I expected. They recut and they pay for it. You don't have to pay for it. They even send you the free color samples just to make sure that it's the right color. But if you get them and you're like, that's not right, they take it on themselves. What makes their customer service so good is they're taking responsibility for all of the mistakes or things that may go wrong with you. So they make sure that they've made it really simple for you to know exactly what will look great in your home. And right now, through August 21st, huge site-wide savings plus an additional 5% off if you use the promo code BECK. One room, whole house. It's Blinds.com. They will help you. Blinds.com, promo code BECK. Get an additional 5% off their huge site-wide sale up until August 21st. Go there now. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions do apply. Promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. 888-727-BECK is the phone number. North Korea has threatened physical action, and they are still saber-rattling. However, there's a great article on Daily Wire that talks about the seven times they have said this very thing. Nuclear strike on the heart of the United States. They said that July of this year. North Korea threatens nuclear strike if provoked by the Navy. They said that in April.
North Korea threatens attack on America with lighter and smaller nukes. That was in March of 2013. North Korea not only claims war is imminent, but the country's military has been given the final authorization to use nukes on the U.S. They will smash the strong will of all United Service personnel, and cutting-edge smaller and lighter and diversified nuclear strikes. That was said by them in 2013, April. I'm glad that they're using diversified strikes. I like to see the inclusion of diversity in nuclear war. North Korea threatens to burn Manhattan down to ashes with a hydrogen bomb. They gave us that warning in 2016.
Hopefully some of the invasion force will be gender nonspecific. That's what I'm hoping.
Well,
just like a Dunkirk.
I hope, a real Dunkirk.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I could barely watch Dunkirk because there were I didn't see any Mexicans.
Very few. Very few.
I didn't see any Mexicans.
It was almost like no Mexicans lived in Belgium at the time.
Where?
That's how ridiculous it is.
Where was the inclusion of the Muslim fighting force?
I know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that stuck out like a sore thumb.
Well, there's so much discussion about their individual religions that you know that none of them were Muslim.
Exactly right. Right. The North Korea also threatened to strike Austin, New York City, and Los Angeles in a chart labeled U.S. Mainland Strike Plan. That came out in 2013. So, in other words, the whole point is they've made these threats before. Did you see the missile? They took a map and superimposed it over something that was in their defense strategy room, where it showed the missile trajectory. And so they took a U.S. map and transposed it on top of it or superimposed it on top of it. And it shows that it's Los Angeles, I think Santa Fe, Dallas. I think it went over either Dallas or it might have been Oklahoma City, then into Georgia, Atlanta, and then, off the coast. It would be a shame if they missed us all together and it was like 500 miles too far. Just want to let you know we're in that. I mean,
scary.
It could happen right to us.
Scary.
We should say of all the stuff, because we know a lot of people focused on the legislation that has and maybe hasn't passed over the Trump presidency. I mean, we have made real progress with ISIS. I mean, some of these generals appointed, who we've praised at the time of the appointments, have really done a good job in advancing this much beyond what Obama was doing. And that is a change that's not legislation based, but it is a good change. I mean, they have beat back, ISIS a good amount so far. It's a real positive for the world.
And it seems balanced. It seems like the strong rhetoric, which we've always believed in, is good, and balanced a softness as well to hold it all together.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there's a woman who was sitting next to a man who was texting. She was on a Southwest Airlines flight from Seattle to San Jose, California. This happened on Monday. And she is flying, and he happens to have a phone he's texting, and he has it in big font. And so he's texting, and what he's texting is about how enjoyable the child molestation has been. And actually, I think it was a woman. Yeah, a woman was... No, it was a guy that was saying, this is great and blah, blah, blah. Who he's sending the text to, I have no idea. And she's kind of like seeing this like, I think that guy, I don't think this is a joke. So she's sitting behind, in the seat behind, and she starts taking pictures of the texts. Then at some point she gets up and goes, talks to the stewardess and says, I want to show you what this guy's been texting. And the stewardesses are freaked out, so they alert the pilot. The pilot alerts police. They meet the texter at the airport. As it turns out, the suspected recipient of the messages was Gail Burnsworth, a woman, 50,
Her home was in Tacoma, Washington. She was arrested because her children in her care, 5 and 7 years old, were the ones that had been victimized. And he just wanted to say, hey, by the way, thanks. It was a great weekend.
So she was in on it, obviously, right?
Not the woman on the plane.
No,
yeah, yes.
The mother? Or?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
If you can call her that.
No, you can't. I'm going to go with no.
Now, listen to this. A law professor is saying that Congress has to act on regulation of the sex bot industry. And I hate to sound like Austin Powers, but apparently now this is real. It's a different kind, Jeffy. There are now sex robots that you can program to react to you as if you're raping them.
Yeah, they can also, they react to emotions. They can be sad, they can be happy, they can be whatever you
terrified
want.
Terrified, yeah. Particularly.
Yeah, that sounds great. Apparently.
I disagree with you on that one, but I gotta say it.
Yeah, and also, there are those that are being programmed to act as if they are being raped, and they are now making them child size. And listen to this. The obvious first step would be to have hearings and to do studies to determine how serious this threat is and if there are any real benefits to having sex bots programmed to simulate being raped. Okay. Now, the argument is that perhaps...
They'll do that to the robot rather than an actual person.
Yeah. Right? But seeing that it's all about power and control and really not even about women, I don't think that these rapists would be seeing the difference between a robot and a woman. Maybe it's just me. I think this is a disturbing trend that maybe we should probably start thinking about. We have so many things that are happening now. With AI, and our world is going to be so different in 10 years. We're just not going to recognize it. And all of this groundwork is being laid right now. All of the things that we're like, that's crazy. That'll never happen. That's all being laid right now. All of these decisions are being made right now, and generally by giant corporations. We were talking earlier about Google and the firing of the Google engineer. Does Google have a right to fire that engineer? Yes. Should they fire that engineer? Well, in my opinion, not when you ask for help on, their diversity programs. And, hey, we're inclusive and we want to make sure that all voices are heard. And then when you express that, in a very cogent and scientific way and lead with, look, neither side is 100% right here. But we shouldn't shut down one side or the other. We really need to come together and start talking about these things. To fire that person sends a chilling message through the company. I'm concerned about it because if Google is so convinced that it's right and righteous, what stops them from taking this in the future and filtering things the way they want to filter? What's stopping us from being this country that is run by corporations? I've never been that guy. But if you're telling me that Facebook, Google, and Apple are not the companies that the left was warning us about, they all thought it was going to be Exxon. Yeah, Exxon controls the energy, but there's also other ways to get energy now. This is the information and the glancing into our lives and shaping of our minds between Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google. Is there a more important and critical group of companies that could change the world overnight should they choose?
No,
I don't think there's
not.
I don't think there's ever been companies that have been more important than those. And
I certainly don't want the government involved in that. I'm not suggesting that. But should these companies become more arrogant and say, well, we're all about science and you're just a science denier, what stops them from completely cutting you off from everything?
Well, and that's why it's important to not look at these things like they're utilities. Like, you can't just depend on these things. You know, it is up to us. If Google wants to delete every single right-wing thing from their search engine, that is their right. They absolutely can do it at any time. Now, it's bad for their business model, and you'll lose half the country from going to your site. But it's absolutely their right to do that. And I think, like, we obviously have this idea that, you know, for example, someone with Nazi propaganda, right? If someone wrote a memo to the entire company saying, you know what, Hitler was right and the Jews should have been in the gas chambers, everyone would be like, okay, yes, we get it. There are lines, right, to that. We would understand him being fired for something like that. The issue is the left in this country is trying to turn very basic human truths into as poisonous as Nazi propaganda.
Yes.
And if we allow that to occur, then you know what? Yeah, every time you say you want lower taxes, you'll get fired. Like that, there is an end to that road eventually where we get there, and that is the conclusion to it. If we aren't sitting here and making sure that when these things happen, we do fight them. That doesn't mean you're going to change the culture of Google overall, but you have to push back.
Somebody has to stand. But you know, I am more convinced that almost everything that we have done in the last, that I have done in the last 5 years, has been misguided in the way of people don't need more information on news. They really don't. You can get all the information you want on news 100 different places. What they do need are facts. They need education. They need to know history, know the difference, an unbiased look at communism, fascism, capitalism, understand what those things are, learn critical thinking, not what to think, but how to think. How do I search for the answers? How do I find the truth myself? Is there truth? Those questions that Socrates wrestled with are the same questions that we should be wrestling with now, and we're just expecting Google to solve them. And they're just going to tell us, and then we'll just go along with it. Listen to this. There is now Connecticut College psychology professor Joan Chrysler is talking about fat shaming. She says fat shaming, speaking with obese patients about losing weight. She argues that fat patients are told to lose weight by their no shame therapy.
Yep.
Such shaming, she says, is mentally and physically harmful and can stigmatize a patient and lead to a misdiagnosis. Asserting that doctors repeatedly advise for weight loss for fat patients while recommending CAT scans, blood work, or physical therapy or other average weight patients, she argues recommending different treatments for patients with the same condition based on their weight is unethical and a form of malpractice. By the way, this is part of her presentation. Weapons of Mass Distraction Confronting Sizeism.
Go ahead and laugh.
Okay.
I mean, that's
it. How is it? Oh, how is it fat shaming?
Man, oh, man.
I mean, look. It's no. If you've watched me, if you've seen me in the last few years, you've seen that I've gained 40 pounds. And part of that 40 pounds has been from chocolate cake, and I've enjoyed probably 20 of the 40 pounds. But there is also something else going on with my body, and I mean, I cannot lose the weight. And I went on Atkins and gained 5 pounds, and I was on strict Atkins that I should have lost like 15 pounds. I went to a doctor just recently, and he said, that's not possible. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It is. Possible. It's happening to me. Okay, so then after a doctor telling me and me agreeing not willingly, but agreeing. You got to eat smaller portions. You got to, you know, you got to exercise. You got to move. You got to do all that stuff. Okay, you're doing all that stuff, and it's still not working. Well, if you got a doctor who's just like, you got to stop eating. You got to stop eating. Doctor, I'm not. Oh, you got to stop eating. You're just a fatso. That's a bad thing. But how is it that we could be going down the road of socialism where we have to tell people if you want treatment, you have to be a certain size. You can't smoke. You can't do these things. You have to exercise, or we cannot, as a society, afford your hip replacement or knee replacement surgery. That's what's happening overseas, and it's going to happen here. But if I tell you you have to lose weight, how dare you? The same socialist will say, that's fat shaming.
It's the Google thing all over again, right? It's prioritizing feelings over physical truths in both stories. I mean, think about that. You're putting someone in medical danger because you don't want to make them feel bad that they're overweight.
And yet those same socialists will not have a problem with shaming people like the guy at Google who was just fired. What was that if not intellectual shaming?
Mm-hmm.
You're a bigot. You're a racist. You're a sexist. You have no place here at Google. You know, Stu said, look at his resume. He's not going to have a hard time finding a job. I disagree with you. You're the guy fired from Google because you're a sexist. You think that guy gets hired in any big company and somebody doesn't follow up on that's where he's working? That company hired him?
They will. I mean, again, you have an advantage if you can get past the fact that you're going to be criticized for having diverse opinions. If you can get past that as a company, you have an advantage over other companies. You can get this guy probably below market value. Because if you can just take the fact that you're going to get some tweets for a few weeks,
I wish we had a job for him. I'd hire him.
Well, I mean, he could do, you know.
No, it's like he would come here. It'd be like dealing with ants. He'd be like, why am I talking to Glenn? He's like an intellectual ant. No.
Yeah, we get
a
lot of
that. Seen my resume?
We get a lot of that from our resumes.
And now this. North Korea has responded to the U.S. Drafted sanctions adopted by the U.N. Security Council. Quote, there is no bigger mistake than the United States believing it can land, that its land is safe because it's across the ocean. The North Korean response also said it would never relinquish its missile and nuclear arsenals. I just saw a report today on how many people are willing to accept a nuclear North Korea in America. It was 11%. And I thought, this is the dumbest survey I've ever seen, because how many people are willing to have millions of deaths to prove that point? People don't understand how close we are to really bad stuff. My Patriot Supply is there for the people who are paying attention to the world and know that life can change in a heartbeat. Get a 102-serving survival food kit this week for only $99. It's healthy food. It'll last 25 years for less than a dollar per serving. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, ship free to your home. Call 800-200-7163. That's 800-200-7163. Or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. 800-200-7163. Preparewithglenn.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK. The Glenn Beck Program.
I have to tell you, this is not going to go well for some people. In reading the book by Dinesh D'Souza, The Big Lie, exposing the Nazi roots of the American left, where he is comparing Hitler's, you know, 1927 speeches to the Democratic Party platform, where he is showing the events of the past in comparison to the events of the days, and the actual historic roots here in America.
He's not going to say anything controversial,
is he? No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. The Big Lie, exposing the Nazi roots of the American left. Dinesh D'Souza joins us when we come back.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
A friend of ours who has gone to jail for his opinion, so much more, he's not gonna have any difficulty with his new book called The Big Lie, Exposing the Nazi Roots of the American Left. Dinesh D'Souza is here, and we begin right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, Dinesh. How are you?
Good to be on.
Are you ready for the pushback that you're going to get on this book?
Well, I'm excited about the book because a lot of my books, I know what I'm going to say when I start out. And I have an argument and I develop the evidence and I lay it out. So, for example, in the Hillary book, Hillary's America, I knew that there was a long complicity of the Democratic Party with racism, for example.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
just a matter of documenting yeah. it, laying it
sure.
out. Here, with this book, of course, I had read a few things about it, Jonah Goldberg's liberal fascism.
Sure.
I noticed that there were sort of eerie similarities between things going on both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, it's really interesting to compare, for example, look at the Ku Klux Klan in America. And then look at the Nazi brown shirts, right? They both grow at about the same time. They both get 3 to 5 million members. In both groups, you have people who love to wear ridiculous costumes, love to do songs and salutes, love to do nightly raids, love to humiliate people, are into racial terrorism. In both cases, they're the wing of a political party. In one case, the Democratic Party, the Klan. In the other case, the Nazi Party. So I thought, this is going to be very interesting to develop these parallels. But what I didn't realize is that there actually was, you may say, intimate relations.
Oh, yeah.
Between the left in this country and the Democrats and the fascists in Italy and the Nazis in Germany. And all of this has been covered up.
Yeah, the connections between the early American progressive movement. I have letters and documentation myself from the I think it's the Human Betterment Society in California, from the Germans saying, thank you for coming up. You have woken a country of 60 million people to this eugenics project, and Hitler is going to get fully behind this. I mean, they were deeply tied into what became the Holocaust. And it's all buried.
And proud of their association.
Yes, very proud.
I'm kind of amused about, there's this guy, Madison Grant, who was a progressive head of the New York Zoological Society, a big advocate of eugenics, and he gets a letter from Hitler. He's super excited. So he goes to this other progressive icon, and he goes, hey, check out my letter from Hitler. And that guy goes, wait right here. Goes to his library, produces his letter from Hitler. So this is a really good example of how the American progressives were aware that they were shaping the Nazi sterilization program, but also the euthanasia program.
Yes, yes.
And they were very proud of it.
Yes. I posted a Facebook post maybe 2 years ago, and it was the National Socialist Party platform in the 20s. And it seemed very familiar to me. You talk about a speech that Hitler gave in 27 where he said, we're all socialists. We are the enemies of today's capitalist system of exploitation, and we are determined to destroy this system under all conditions. They had a 25-point program. The nationalization of large corporations, trusts, government control of banking and credit, the seizure of land without compensation if it was for public use, the splitting of large land holdings into smaller units, confiscation of war profits, prosecution of bankers and other lenders on grounds of usury, abolition of incomes unearned by work, profit sharing for workers in all large companies, broader pension system paying higher benefits, and universal free health care and universal free education.
If you read that platform at a Democratic National Convention, you'd get thunderous applause. And I think that's true of Mussolini's speeches, for example. Fascism and Nazism were firmly on the left. And in one of the chapters, I traced the genesis of fascism. It arose out of what's called the crisis of Marxism. Marx had made all these predictions that communist revolution was coming to Germany, was coming to England. And when it didn't happen, the really smart socialists sat around, they scratched their heads, and they said, we've got to revise Marx. He got something fundamentally wrong. And in the 20th century, out of that crisis of Marxism come two new things. One, Leninist Bolshevism, and the other, Mussolini's fascism. They both are spin-offs from socialism. They're on the same side of the aisle. And because of World War II, and because Hitler was on one side, the Soviets were on the other, this has made it really easy for progressives to pretend like if communism is on the left, fascism must be on the right.
Correct.
But this misses, of course, the fact that sister ideologies do go to war.
And they're relatively the same. One is about workers of the world, and one is about workers of the nation uniting. It's pretty much nationalism versus world domination under a grand unifying theory of we're all in this one together. But it's the same awful stew, is it not?
It absolutely is. And even that distinction is blurred because although Lenin talked about international socialism, as soon as Stalin came in, he said, Mother Russia, socialism in one country. So if you think about it, Stalin was a national socialist, just like Hitler.
So help me out on where have you, you've seen what's going on with Google.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is not going to lead anywhere good. And I can't believe that those people who have said they've been kept in a closet for their viewpoint or their sexuality or whatever, their whole life, are now shoving people into closets and silencing people. I don't understand how the average person, the average Democrat, isn't starting to become afraid of what they're unleashing in universities and in the silencing of those who can make a reasonable, rational, and scientific argument.
So this really is the fascist mindset. And I say this because typically if we look around America now, we would think that the best example of fascism would be, say, these Antifa guys dressed in masks, carrying weapons, bike locks and bats. They're there to threaten, to intimidate, to beat people up. So they look a lot like Mussolini's black shirts from the 20s. But I think there's a deeper fascism that's a much bigger problem than the guys on the street at Berkeley. And that is the fascism of the institutions. So the Nazis had a term called Gleichschaltung, which basically means coordination. But their idea was, we have a society, everybody's got to march in line, in lockstep. They've got to be in sync with Nazi ideology. And if they fall out, we have to pressure them, we have to cajole them, we have to force them. And this Gleichschaltung is now in America. It's on the left. It's called political correctness. But I don't just mean you use the wrong word. I'm talking about the way in which Hollywood, the media, academia, and now corporations like Google, if you fall athwart the ideology, they will ruin you. I mean, they'll fire you. They will humiliate you. They will make you into a pariah. This kind of thing is very scary, and it has a deep parallel with what was going on in Europe in the middle of the century.
You know, I have deep respect for you, right?
Right.
Oh, uh-oh. That's what he says to me usually when he insults
me. Look out.
So. I'm not going to insult you. Those on the right who do not agree with my point of view of Donald Trump have done all of those things that you have described. In fact, they have been as vicious, in some ways more vicious, than the Soros group that went after me on the left. There is a love in this country right now of winning at all cost and destroying anyone who stands against you that is truly frightening.
You know, I have to agree with that. I was thinking the other day that when I came to America in the late 70s, I'm a young Reaganite from my college days. American politics was a gentleman's quarrel. And one could envision Reagan and Tip O'Neill having it out, but then you could see them having a beer afterward. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, there was a shared belief that, you know, Tip of O'Neill, you know, he loved America. And we all want America to be prosperous. We want America to be strong. We want America to be the world's leader. We might disagree about how to share the spoils, how American prosperity should be distributed. But it's a debate about means, not about ends. And it just occurred to me how much all of that has broken down. Now, I blame the left because I think that the breakdown started with Obama. And by that, I mean the deploying of the government against your critics, the willingness to sort of treat your critic not just as a political adversary, but as a real enemy, somebody right. you'd like to see put out of business altogether. And I think that it is that dysfunctional atmosphere that produced Trump. In other words, the ordinary Republican goes, we appointed all these nice guys one after the other. There was Bob Dole, self-deprecating and witty. There was John McCain, war hero. There was the super squeaky, clean-cut Romney. And yet all these guys began to helplessly flail in the wind as they were converted into Lucifer by the other side. All right, enough of all that. We're going to get a real tough guy, and he may be not be all that straight around the edges, but he can throw a punch and he can take a punch. We've got to fight like those guys. So it is this kind of bare-knuckled atmosphere that we're in now.
And I don't think that it is, you know, to say that, I mean, you know me where I stand on Obama, but to say that it was Obama, I mean, today is the anniversary of the Nixon resignation enemies list. Nixon, and I think this is the real problem in America. We keep looking at left and right. We keep, which is bogus in America, the way it is, you know, they've made the left and right in America to be the European left and right. And that is not true. Right is small government, almost anarchy. And left is total government, be it fascism, totalitarianism, whatever. It's that those are our two rights, the left and right in America. But it has become this Democratic and Republican thing when Richard Nixon was a gigantic progressive. It's progressivism in the early 20th century that was fueling much of what was happening in Germany and teaching, and they were teaching us. In the same way, I mean, it was a cozy get together. And when you have progressivism not recognized in both parties, on both sides, as people who just want control of other people, that's where we're having this battle, because we can point to each other and say, well, you did this. Yeah, because my side has that gene in it, too.
Absolutely. Well, progressivism was in both parties, even at the beginning. Now, the Republican version of it was softer than the Democratic version. So, for example, Teddy Roosevelt, although he used some Darwinist rhetoric about survival of the fittest, was thinking mainly about foreign policy. And if you talked to him about something like forced sterilization, I think he would, family man that he was, he would blanch a little bit. Although
I have letters from him that will horrify you on sterilization and the selecting of. We're going to look at humans, I think the quote is, like the dumbest farmers. Even on farms, we don't let our best stock breed with our worst stock.
I mean, he was pretty clear on some of that spooky stuff.
Yeah, I've read some things that have made my, you know, my eyebrows go up. And but this all took such a bad turn in the 20s and 30s in Europe. One of the discoveries in the book that really startled me was the degree to which when the Nazis got together to write the Nuremberg Laws, and they were all sitting around the table, all these top guy, head of the Justice Department and so on.
Explain for people who don't know what the Nuremberg Laws.
So the Nuremberg Laws were the laws that made Jews into second-class citizens. They involved segregation of Jews into ghettos, state-sponsored discrimination, keeping the Jews out of certain professions, and later they were modified for confiscation of Jewish property and so on. So the Nazis go... They had a, it's one of the Nazi meetings we have transcripts of. Why? Because the Nazis go, we're the first people in the world to be creating a racist state. It's fantastic. So watch us do it. And one of the guys who was there had studied in the United States. And he goes, time out, guys. Sorry to interrupt the party, but a racial state has already been created by the Democratic Party in America. We're not the first people to this picnic. They've already done it. And all the questions we're exploring, intermarriage between groups, segregation, discrimination. They've been there for years. So the Nazis then immediately consult the Democratic laws. And let's remember, every segregation law in the South passed by a Democratic legislature, signed by a Democratic governor, enforced by Democratic officials. So the Nazis take a look at this and they go, fantastic, let's just cross out the word black, write in the word Jew, and we're off to the races. Now, to me, the most sort of poignantly pungent aspect of this debate is at one point the Nazis begin to debate who is a Jew, because there's a lot of intermarriage that's been going on since the Middle Ages, and the Nazis are not sure if you can classify someone as a Jew who's only, let's say, half Jewish. Again, the Nazi who had studied in America, I think his name was Krieger, he goes, problem solved. In America, they have the one-drop rule. Basically, if you have any black, any visible blackness in you, you're black. And this is where the whole story gets kind of crushing. The Nazis look at each other and they go, that's too much. Basically, they're saying the Democrats are too racist for us. We can't go with the one-drop rule. And in fact, the Nuremberg Laws, as they were written, you need three Jewish grandparents to count as Jewish. So the Nazis, you may say, took a softer line than the Democratic Party on the question of racial identity.
The name of the book is The Big Lie. Dinesh D'Souza, more in a second. Our sponsor this half hour is Car Shield. Nothing is cheap when it comes to your car, especially the summer road trip that you might be planning. If you have unexpected car repair, could cancel it or stop it in the middle. Unless you have extended coverage from Car Shield. New water pump sets you back $500. Air conditioner, $1,500. A new engine will cost you over five grand. Get covered now with Car Shield, the ultimate in extended vehicle service protection. It's affordable protection that can save you thousands of dollars on repairing your car. You can have your favorite mechanic do it. You can have the dealership do the work. Doesn't matter. They make sure that everybody is paid. You're not having to pay the mechanic directly and then wait for the check. Save yourself on high car repair bills. Get covered by Car Shield before something goes wrong. Call 800-CAR-6100, 800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com. Promo code Beck, save 10%. Carshield.com. Deductibles may apply.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
With Dinesh D'Souza, his book is called The Big Lie, Exposing the Nazi Roots of the American Left. You say really controversial things in here that I know the research behind it is absolutely solid. I have done the research. I have many of the letters that you are talking about in here. In one of the chapters, you talk about how FDR was America's first fascist dictator. And people find that so offensive. But they are not, again, looking back at the time. At the time, the progressives and many Americans, this is before it had all been discredited, thought that that's what a big state, that the big state was the scientific way to go.
It's very difficult for us in the aftermath of World War II, in an era where fascism and Nazism have been completely stained by the odor of Holocaust. It's really hard for us to think why anyone would have been attracted to those ideologies. And so in order to understand this, it's almost like you've got to put some historical, you've got to get in a time machine and go before those things happened. And see what appealed about fascism. So the fascists talked about society as an organism, and each individual is a cell. Your life has no value by itself, but like any cell, your value is what you contribute to the whole.
Pick it back up with Eric Dinesh D'Souza, The Big Lie, when we come back.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Dinesh D'Souza is here. The Big Lie is the book, exposing the Nazi roots of the American left. He was explaining how FDR was America's first fascist dictator. And I know that sounds horrible to say now, but we have to look at history as it is. At the time, they thought fascism and totalitarianism, big state, was the future. They thought it was the new scientific, progressive way. And all of this other stuff where, you know, people got together in their towns, it was just outdated and old and antiquated and wouldn't work.
Socialism and fascism and progressivism, these are the three great collectivist movements of the last century. It was an era in which words like dictator were positive, because a dictator is somebody who gave instructions and got things done. Totalitarianism for Mussolini was a good word. Mussolini's point is you can't have a fragmented society. We need to have a totalitarian society in which everything is operating toward a singular purpose.
It's Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, it's as old as history itself. Nebuchadnezzar, let's make bricks. If we all make bricks, if we all are the same and we're working to a one goal, we'll be able to build a tower to reach heaven. It's the same thing, and it never works.
And the progressives, like the fascists, saw democracy as a mechanism to achieve power, but not something to take too seriously. I mean, when FDR's New Deal schemes were being blocked by the Supreme Court, what does FDR do? He basically goes, let's stack the court. Right. Let me appoint six new justices. So I essentially have created a majority. And the only reason he didn't do it is the court essentially buckled in and gave in to him. Now, the progressives today in the textbooks, they wittily describe this as the switch in time that saved nine. They're basically talking about the trampling of democratic institutions as some kind of a joke. But that's how FDR treated it. And so there's a fascist streak. I wouldn't say FDR became a full-fledged fascist dictator, but there was a fascist streak in him that is exactly why Mussolini and even Hitler thought he was like them.
So you have to read a book. They're hard to find, but I think I actually have an extra copy. And when you do find them, sometimes this section of the book is taken out. But it was written by Stuart Chase, who you know named the New Deal. And he was instrumental in the shaping of the totalitarian view of the government. So he writes a book called The Road on Which We're Traveling. And it's just at the end of the war when we know we're going to win. And he says, okay, so after the war, these things are going to happen. It's towards the end of the book. And he says, we now know that fascism and totalitarianism are discredited. So I don't know what we're going to call this, but we'll, for our purposes here, just call it System X. And he says the United States now, through the last 20 years, has put so much in that you will see System X, which is totalitarianism and fascism. He just couldn't bring himself to call it that. But he explains how it has been grown and put in under the guise of freedom.
Well, interestingly, if you think about the Democrats today and ask this question, are there economic policies? And I'm thinking here, not just Obama and Hillary, but let's say Bernie, Elizabeth Warren. Are their economic policies more socialist in the Marxist sense, or are they more fascist? Now, if you look up fascism, it says, the definition's really clear, state-run capitalism. If we think of Obamacare, we have private corporations, we have private hospitals, we have private insurance companies, mm-hmm. but the government is directing them. The government's setting prices, deciding on reimbursements, mm-hmm. deciding who gets coverage and for what.
It is what they've said. China is the new model, which is state-run capitalism.
And then under Obama, state-run control of banks, insurance, investment companies, the energy sector, increasingly higher education. So this is, you know, the old socialists would go and nationalize it all. The socialists would take over the energy industry and the government would go take out oil in Midland, Texas. But we don't do that. Our economic policies that the Democrats advocate are more classically fascist. You go to Midland, Texas, you drill the oil out, you put it in the barrel and label it, and then we will saunter in to kind of take control of it and tell you what to do with that wealth.
So reading your book, there's very little in there that isn't well documented, and you're making a strong case. However, we are in a place now to where nobody even knows what fascism is. Nobody even knows what communism is. It's just a smear that both sides use. You're making an intellectual case and saying this is what it is and this is what the roots are here in America. You can agree or disagree, but we're not going to have that conversation. We're not going to have a conversation of you bring your facts to the table, I'll bring other facts to the table, and we'll see which ones really hold up in the test of time and scrutiny. How do you share facts like this without jamming fingers into the other person's chest and being able to have a dialogue? If we don't come to a place where Martin Luther King was, where he said, stop trying to win. You've got to reconcile. If we can't come to the reconciliation of just ourselves with the historic truth, we're doomed.
Now, I agree completely that that is the goal. In other words, King's beloved community, that's where we're trying to go. Here's the problem, that for a generation, for example, as long as the left felt that they could play the race card with impunity, they were not going to stop. As long as Republicans were on the defensive, no, mm-hmm. we're not racist, as long as Ken Melman of the RNC was running around apologizing for the Republican Party's racist history at black churches, the Democrats, they just had us where they wanted us. The moment we hit back hard and said, in effect, actually, you're blaming us for the stuff that you did, mm-hmm. and you haven't apologized for it, and that's when you now have a pause in the race debate, and it's precisely the counterstrike that's produced that.
So I agree with you, because I think there's nothing... When I say reconciliation, you'll don't misconstrue Martin Luther King for a weakling. He was a strong defender of the truth, and where he was going. So I'm not by any stretch saying we don't make these points. We must use history as our guide,
yeah.
And be able to expose this. But how do we now get this to the ears of people who are so wrapped up in the game that it's just not going to make a difference?
Well, if you ask me what I'm trying to do with this book, I'm sort of trying to take away the fascism card in kind of the same way I tried to take away the race card from the left. I'm trying to blunt the force of it. I'm not using the words Nazi and fascist as a verbal javelin, because, first of all, I'm not saying, and I don't even think the left is saying, when they say Trump is a fascist, they don't mean that Trump is Hitler circa 1945. Trump
Correct.
Hasn't started a world war.
Correct.
He hasn't gassed 6 million
Correct.
Jews. They're saying Trump is Hitler circa 1933. He's a demagogue who just came into power promising these yeah. dreams of ultra greatness. So I'm saying, all right, the way to take away the kind of smear campaign is to take a pause and dive into the meaning of these terms, really show that the left is the party of fascism. And I'm hoping that in the same way, it will strip the fascist card of its kind of power to shut down debate. And not just shut down debate. The left is using the charge of fascism to justify all kinds of behavior that would never otherwise be condoned. I mean, if, for example, we said about Obama, A, we're not going to show up at his inauguration. B, we're going to disrupt it. C, we're going to get him on obstruction of justice, even if there was no underlying crime. People would be apoplectic. They would think we had lost our minds. But the left goes, of course we do all this stuff, but we're doing it because we're fighting Hitler in the 30s. We're using by any means necessary.
Do you believe that, because I think this is actually a losing strategy, because I do believe that I know Democrats who say, you know, they were out marching against the guy on the first weekend. We have absolutely no credibility. Would you just shut up? And when something is real, deal with it. I think both sides excusing anything and being offended by everything, those are both losing strategies in the end. Do you agree with that or not?
I do agree with that. I do agree with that. And I, you know, the other problem I think is that the intellectual quality of our public debate has really dropped. I think back to when I was 22, I looked up to people like Milton Friedman, yeah. Solzhenitsyn, Friedrich Hayek, even William F. Buckley, not only their rhetorical excellence and philosophical range, but their style. There was a kind of yeah. elegance to them yeah. that seems to have diminished, if not disappeared, from public life. And there is no, you know, the other problem is, you know, for example, ever since the election, Chris Matthews, Rachel Maddow, Bill Maher, they've been bloviating about fascism almost nonstop. So now I have a book and I say to them, okay, guys, let's have it out. Let's see if fascism really belongs on the right or the left. Dead silence, you know, not a word.
They won't put you on.
They won't put me on because I think they're scared. I think they know that they don't know what they're talking about. And they know that the moment...
Well, it's all footnoted. I mean, you have all the sources in the back. And, I mean, you know, you can disagree with conclusions that you might make. But facts are facts. Facts are facts.
That's absolutely true. I mean, when you look at the actual attributions by Hitler... I'm getting this idea from the Jacksonian Democrats of the mm-hmm. 19th century. And they're the ones who threw the Indians off their land. They displaced them. They took over their land. They enslaved the ones that remained. I'm going to do that in Poland, in the Slavic countries, in Central Europe, in Russia. I'm going to settle it with German families. I mean, this is out of the mouth of Hitler, you might say. And very hard to deny. Either he said it or he didn't. But it's right there in Mein Kampf.
We were talking in the break about the similarities of the rise of the Ku Klux Klan and the brown shirts and how they rose to power at the same time, the same strength, really, the same types of tactics. Obviously, in America, so far, thankfully, we've been able to avoid the worst parts of what happened out of those movements. Even though they were terrible here, they never rose to those levels. Was it the Constitution? Is it the founders that prevented that rise of those terrible elements in our country? What was the difference?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't think you can say that we were spared those horrors. Because if you think about it, the racist regime of the Nazis lasted for 12 years, 1933 to 1945. The racist regime that the Democrats established lasted for over 100 years, from, I would say, the 1820s until at least the 1950s. And in both cases, you had racial terrorism, the Klan, the brown shirts, that was then replaced by systematic laws that inferiorized a whole group. And so even Hitler talked about it. He said Hitler shut down the brown shirts. He goes, this is emotional anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. He goes, the Nuremberg laws and the subsequent laws, those are what he called rational anti-Semitism. The state will treat you as the inferior creature you are. We don't need to have hooligans beat you up on the street. And the Democratic South did exactly the same thing. The ruling power said, we don't need the Klan running around burning people's homes. We will just establish two separate societies. White people on top, black people at the bottom. They won't associate a whole lot with each other. Two separate societies inside of one.
Dinesh D'Souza, the name of the book is The Big Lie, Exposing the Nazi Roots of the American Left. The Big Lie by Dinesh D'Souza. Always good to have you. Thanks, Dinesh.
A real pleasure.
I'm going to tell you about Goldline, but I want to give you two stories. One, I talked about earlier today that we are now at the highest level of personal credit card debt in the history of the world.
America has broken new records. There are more people grabbing more credit cards than ever before. I remember my parents, and I must have been six, bringing all of us around because they went down the credit card route, and they finally got themselves bailed out, and they cut the credit cards up and threw them in the fireplace, all of us as a family. And I don't even remember. It's like one of the three memories of that house that I have. So it had to be impactful to our family to have my parents do that. We are going the opposite direction now as people. Also, new news today, Fannie and Freddie may need $100 billion. They put out their report yesterday. They did a stress test of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. What a surprise. If there is any kind of economic crisis in the mortgage world, they will need $100 billion of taxpayer money. Nothing's changed. Please call and get an exclusive report on the five threats to the economy. It was written by David Stockman. He is President Reagan's budget director. He's put this report out. It's free. All you have to do is call 866-465-3546. That's 866-GOLDLINE. They're also extending their price protection program. For as little as $2,500, you can get 3 months of price protection all the way up to a year if you put $25,000. What that means is in a year from now, if the price of gold has gone down, they give you more gold, so you haven't lost a single penny on your investment. Nobody's doing that. Try to get that from Bitcoin or from the stock market or from your house. Make sure you read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. It's 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's Dinesh D'Souza's book, The Big Lie, you have to read. And there's stuff in there that I don't agree with, but he's made a really good, strong case historically. In many ways. And he also takes George Soros on. And I remember that. I remember doing that too.
That went well for you, right?
If I remember right. Really well. That went really well.
Did you get a trophy for that? I can't remember what the award was.
No, I don't think it was a trophy or an award.
No, it was a participation trophy. Yes, because you participated.
I think what I got was a group of angry Palestinians, I think, that were protesting an event just outside of the gate.
Well, you got that, as well as claims of anti-Semitism, which didn't make a heck of a lot of sense.
Right.
A multi-million dollar effort to get your career to end.
Good. Yep. But he outlined some of that same stuff in his book. Good luck, Dinesh. The Big Lie.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.